Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, we finally made it. It is almost here. How are you doing?
I'm great. It is Christmas Eve, I guess I'd call it, something right along those lines. Draft day is always my favorite days of the year, has been since I've been about 8 years old. I always tell the story that, you know, back then they used to have it during the week and it wasn't as big a media of event. And I would have my Kuiper guide and any guide I could possibly, you know, dig up. And my mom would send me to school if I had 104 fever. But on draft day, I got to stay home. I mean, it's just the way it is. And my wife, since she's known me, is known to get the heck out of the way during the draft. I can't wait. And we have an excellent analyst on to talk draft. He's not just a fantasy guy. Ian Wharton, he was on my Locked On NFL podcast not all that long ago and really, really does good work.
Yeah, Ian, welcome into the show.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity and really excited for this Thursday to get here.
Yeah, the countdown is on, and I know I can just imagine, Ian, that this is just so many hours that you've put in. We do want to hear about your draft guide. I know Matt and I have been checking that out, and I'm sure many others have as well.
Yeah, so I was really excited to get this out. I created a draft guide a couple years ago. Wasn't able to last year just with all the writing obligations. And so got right back to it this year. And I'm really happy with the product and the end product. It was really well received, I think, by a lot of folks. And just trying to look at it a little bit differently than you know, obviously the market is flooded with these draft guides. So, obviously I'm just trying to make mine a little bit different. Really, I don't know that it's special in a sense like that, but I do think it's a little bit different as far as breaking down positionally how I look at guys, how I evaluated them. So like specifically, you know, if we want to talk like wide receivers, we're looking at like X receivers, you know, Z receivers, that slot, speed, possession, that sort of thing. And I don't like to really box prospects in too much, but I do think it's a little bit more realistic to kind of look at them and say, you know, this is generally speaking going to be their role at the next level. And that's really important for the evaluation factor because that's what teams doing. It's exactly how they want to, project these guys into their schemes. And obviously it's really difficult to do for 32 teams. So it's, you know, some of it gets lost in the way and some of these guys may go to different situations than what I've projected and do really well. And hopefully they do. But I tried to look at it with like a broad scope like that. And I think it did a pretty decent job of encapsulating that.
Yeah, we're only going to talk, you know, fantasy related here, but I do urge everyone out there to get this guide. It's not just fantasy, of course. It's every position, defensive guys, O-linemen, et cetera. And what I think what separates Ian's guide from many of the others, and you all listening will get a heavy dose of this, is he isn't afraid to go out on a limb on some prospects. I mean, guys he likes, he will rank very high, and he backs it up. So, I mean, we're going to get right into it here, and you'll see that with a lot of his takes on the fantasy-relevant players.
And Ian, you said you don't know if your draft guide is special. I think it is. I've really enjoyed it, and I've gotten to see quite a few of these from some other folks and learned a lot from all of them. But a couple of things I really liked about yours, and you mentioned how you ranked the X receivers versus Z versus slot guys. That was something I hadn't seen before. I think that was a unique way of doing it. And also, we'll dig into the quarterbacks a little bit soon, but your quarterback accuracy charts, how the quarterbacks succeeded and struggled on all parts of the field under different circumstances. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, thanks. This has kind of been like a project I picked up a couple of years ago. I was doing NFL quarterbacks and I've kind of just refined it and added to it. Like at the time, I think this was probably 3 years ago, I wasn't doing like against pressure. I wasn't doing on third and fourth down. I wasn't really charting like how I attributed sacks. So it was really just very basic information and just kind of looking at it as catchable passes. And so it is opinionated. This isn't like a factual completion percentage chart, but I think it kind of adds my own flavor to it by saying this is the amount of passes that I thought were catchable reasonably without like the receiver just making an insane play or maybe like a tipped pass that should have been intercepted and it goes for a completion somehow. I just don't think quarterbacks should really get as much credit for that stuff as they do. So I try to keep that very consistent and whether it has an actual relevance to draft success, I'm not 100% sure. And so that's actually what I'm kind of going to be working on this summer as soon as the draft passes. And I've already got a lot of quarterbacks from the last about 7 or 8 years queued up. And so I'm going to go back, watch a lot of those games, chart those guys, and kind of create a little bit more of like a database to see if there's actually any relevance to this. And even if there's not, it's kind of just fun just to add some context to what my eyes saw.
Yeah, absolutely. I know in your draft guide, you included a what I do mock draft, kind of how you would place each player if you were handed the keys to each team. And that's really what I want to start with. And we can stick with the fantasy relevant positions, but you're fine to cover defensive players or really any players here. Who are some players and teams you just see as perfect fits that you're really hoping, I guess, meet up on Thursday night?
Yeah, so I think it's just going to be pretty crazy. I mentioned this on Twitter earlier that I just think this is going to be an absolutely insane first round compared to what expectations are. We've seen a lot of crazy mock drafts. And so, like, it's funny because the response I got to some of these is like, well, there's no way that would happen, even if you're projecting that. And I'm just like, how can we say that? Like, we have no idea who's even going number two in this draft, let alone 12 or 25 or whatever it is. So yeah, I did try to kind of give this a look and give people an idea of kind of what I would look at. As far as perfect fits, you know, we could argue some of these, and I'm definitely down to do that. But I'm really looking at, you know, number eight, I'm looking at the Carolina Panthers. I know that they're linked to Christian McCaffrey. I would really like that pick. I think that would be a smart choice. But in my mock draft, I went with Corey Davis, the wide receiver from Western Michigan. I don't think that the NFL is going to be as hot on him because he wasn't able to test, unfortunately, at the combine or at a pro day because of his ankle injury. But I look at their receiving core, and I'm not really terribly high on their receiving core. I look at Devin Funchess and Calvin Benjamin, and those guys are volume types players. They're not incredibly efficient with their targets, and I would really like to get a little bit more of like a consistent possession receiver there, a guy who can create after the catch as opposed to winning prior to the catch. I think Davis would be really interesting there. I gave O.J. Howard to the Bills, which I think they're going to end up going quarterback if they get the chance to, but that's just a really fun matchup if Mike Williams isn't there, because you look at their receivers, they have Andre Holmes, Corey Brown, and Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins is fantastic, but he's also a guy who's playing like six games a year at this point in his career. So who knows if he's even going to be in Buffalo past this coming season with his option. We don't even know if they're going to pick up his option. So they've got to add some receiving talent there, whether it's in the form of John Ross. Even John Ross, I think, would be a nice boost, especially for Tyrod Taylor. He'd be a great fit. But they're also not committed to Tyrod Taylor long term. So, like, it's a lot for them to consider, obviously, at least in the short term. Howard or John Ross would be really good there. 19 at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I just think running back fits them so perfectly. Obviously, we know about the muscle hamster. We know about Doug Martin, his suspension. There's been talk that he could be cut all offseason. You know, maybe that eventually does happen, depending on what happens in this draft. I really like the mix of the pairing of Joe Mixon with Tampa Bay. Obviously, there's the off-field aspect to this. So through my guide, the one thing that you'll see consistently is that I do not factor in character and I don't factor in injuries, because I'm not privy to that information. I'm not connected enough to know that. And even if I was connected enough to know that, kind of like the sources that you hear that stuff from may not have that firsthand experience. And the way that they inherit information may be a little bit different than the way that I take in information, the way that I process information, whether that be interviews or secondhand information that they're getting that from. So just looking at it from an on-the-field perspective, I think Mixon would be fantastic there. Just continue to add talent around Jameis Winston. I think they could also use a slot receiver. They've got no chance at him, but Christian McCaffrey would be a lot of fun there as well.
Ian, real quick, I just want to stop you and just commend you, because I think that's really, really smart from where you sit, putting out a guide to ignore character and medical. I mean, I always say this all the time. The hardest part of my job is when anyone asks me about injuries. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know when I was in the Browns building. I mean, I didn't go to med school. I mean, every coach that is worth their weight turns to the team doctor and asks him, you know. I mean, so it's so far, we have no clue with injuries, let alone, you know, what people found at the combine, or boy, this guy's got something in his knee, or Hines Ward didn't even have an ACL coming out of college. Nobody knew, you know, those type of things. I mean, that's really the number one goal of the combine. And you're right with the character. I mean, Mixon, obviously, we know that, you know, you got to mention it, that there's rumors that they're speculating around Cook, and we know what Mixon did. But for us to say, you know, what this person is like is crazy.
Yeah, and that's that's basically my stance. And what kind of got me on this was it was Tyrann Mathieu a few years ago. So, like, obviously everyone loved the talent, and I liked the talent too, but I was just, like, outspoken against it. And I was just like, there's no way I would ever draft this guy. And he just turns his life around completely. And I just felt like such a dummy. And I was just like, why am I doing this? I don't know this guy at all. I know nothing about him as far as a character. For me to sit there and judge him as a person, it's just, to me, it's not right. As far as the injuries, I do think obviously a lot of this stuff would be altered by the injury information, but a lot of that stuff doesn't come out. We don't know about it until after the fact.
Nope.
So it is what it is. I just try to control the variables that I can control, which is the way that, you know, I watch film, the way I take in other numbers. You know, I'm not one of these guys that's 100% film, and I'm not one of these guys that's 100% numbers. I don't think really anyone's too far. I hope no one's too far one direction. I do see people too far one direction or the other, but I try to keep it balanced and you know, try to better my own process.
Ian, looking back at some of those picks you just mentioned, Carolina with Corey Davis. Yeah, I agree with you. Recent reports sound like maybe he's falling a little bit, but that's certainly a need for the Panthers. Losing Ginn, losing Corey Brown, you mentioned him, and then Funchess struggling a little bit. Certainly a need for the Panthers. So maybe they do look at Corey Davis or one of the other wide receivers at that point. Matt, what about – I know you're a big O.J. Howard fan. How would you feel about him landing with the Buffalo Bills?
I like it quite a bit. It's sort of a fallback plan in a way. I mean, I think wide receiver is the biggest need on that team by far. And to me, I'm not sure if we've even had this conversation, but I look at this wide receiver class, and I think Corey Davis is the number one guy on my board, the only real guy that I profile as a number one NFL receiver, which is a term I don't throw around very much. I mean, I think this is including Mike Williams, I think this is a draft littered with number two and three receivers, with the exception of Davis. So that would be my key target if I were the Bills, but there's a really good chance he's not there. And if Howard is and Davis isn't, I think that makes your right tackle and wide receiver needs a little less. And he's a massive upgrade over Clay. I mean, and that's a run first team. He's a good blocker. I mean, and I've been saying this a lot, that he's a double off the wall. You know, I mean, he's as safe as they get.
Yeah, I think so too. And he sounds like he'll hear his name called in those first 10 or 12 picks for sure. Ian, let's focus now specifically on the quarterback position, and we just want to hit on a few players who maybe could be viewed as outliers in your rankings. You're a little bit different than the consensus on some of these guys, and at quarterback, it starts with your top-ranked player, Patrick Mahomes. You've got him as your quarterback one. He seems to be gaining some steam as we get near the draft as well. It was just a couple weeks ago. It seemed crazy to think of him as a first rounder, and now he almost seems like it's a lock that he'll be a first round pick. What are your thoughts on Mahomes, and what was it that you saw that made you rank him as your top quarterback overall?
You know, Mahomes, he's just a guy that to me, he is just such a fun watch. Like, whether or not I would have ranked him high, he was my favorite player to just sit back and watch and enjoy. Just the decision making that he has. It is sometimes a turbulent level, and it's definitely going to be something that his coaching staff is ultimately going to have to work with him the most on. And he kind of acknowledged that, I think, talking on the Gruden quarterback camp, where he was like, you know, it's my job to be the downfield passer and create big plays and touchdowns. And that's why I did it at Texas Tech. That was my role. And it's kind of exciting to hear that. And then you watch some of the plays where he's just throwing the ball up into double and triple coverage, and you're like, all right, so that's what we're going to be banking on, is that his willingness to improve that and not necessarily do that. So you kind of have to live a little bit with the devil there. He's probably going to do that at the next level a little bit, but I'm willing to overlook that. And I'm, you know, if I'm the general manager of a team, and I think mentally he is extremely impressive. Doug Farrar of Bleacher Report actually did a an interview with him and kind of talked about the system that Cliff Kingsbury put into place at Texas Tech and how that's going to translate to the NFL. And that, as far as that goes, I think he will be somewhat prepared for the NFL. You know, a lot of people, especially Jared Goff, gave him a lot of kind of questions over the system that he came from. I think Texas Tech's is actually a little bit more sophisticated than that, and that's going to be something that's going to help him entering the NFL with, like, the verbiage. So, like, a lot of people are going to question the mental aspect, and obviously I'm not going to speculate too much on that, but there does seem to be some check marks there. Obviously, being the son of a professional athlete, I think that's going to be advantageous to him as well. Physically, just on the field, he is so overwhelming with his positives and his strength and what he's capable of doing that you look at the innate qualities of a quarterback and the kind of elite tier of quarterback traits. You look at extending the play outside of the pocket while still keeping your eyes downfield, being able to deliver accurate passes on pressure situations, not only against pressure, but also third and fourth down, and also in clutch situations kind of towards like the end of games. He checked most of those boxes and did so at a very high level. I do think at times he sort of pressed a little bit too much, and you could see that he felt the pressure to score 60 points a game, and he was making the decisions like, I've got to score a touchdown this drive or else we're out of this game. And so that's something that, again, it's going to be sort of something that could be the demise of him in the NFL as well, if he can never shake that, if he's going to be too reckless. But yeah, I think he's very similar to what we saw out of Matthew Stafford as far as the talent. Obviously, the level of refinement is not there. Matthew Stafford went to quote-unquote pro-style system, which nowadays I don't think we should really use that term too much. I think that's kind of a faulty term. But back when Stafford came out, that was more of a realistic term where guys were under the shotgun. They were used to turning their back on the defense and able to make timing-based throws. The timing-based throws thing is something that Mahomes showed when he had the opportunity. Obviously, his velocity and his ability to put the ball on the money with great placement, maximize yards after the catch, that's really what you're going to be banking on. And then you're going to say, well, we're going to hope that we can build a scheme friendly enough to him that will ease him into that situation and just take advantage of those physical gifts. But it's just so rare to find someone that throws the ball the way that he does and be able to compensate for when he makes mistakes, because there are times when his process just looks absolutely awful, but he's dropping a perfect pass in from 40 yards downfield in stride. So it's just, it's a little bit more results-based over process-based, which I'm not usually that type of person, but I'm a little bit more willing to trust his skills for better or for worse in this situation.
Ian, your top four quarterbacks the same as mine, and I've caught a lot of heat for not being on board with Trubisky and Watson, who you have three and four, and I agree with that. What are your concerns with those two? I mean, to me, I don't think they're – it's the whole truck and trailer thing, like I always talk about that Daniel Jeremiah mentions. I think those guys are a lot more Andy Dalton or Alex Smith than they are the trailer, the truck.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly my number one concern with these two guys is, what's the upside here? Where do we go? Yeah. Once they get to the NFL, I mean, I think there is a benefit to having that type of player in place, and it's going to keep some of these guys' jobs for maybe a decade if they work out. I do worry a little bit about Watson's turnovers, and I think that could be ultimately what really hurts him the most in the NFL and kind of keeps him back at the next level. Not having a great arm is gonna be a factor as well, depending on where he goes. But you know, Trubisky as well, you look at this guy never had a second season for defenses to game plan against him. How many times did we see a quarterback have a really good year, come back for year two, and then defenses have already changed to what their strengths are, and they never recover. They never actually find that groove again. I remember Javon Sneed, even a couple of years ago, he was supposed to be a number one pick. All of a sudden, he doesn't even go drafted the next year. And I'm sure there's way more examples than that, but he always sticks out to me as kind of like these one-year quarterback starters, the question marks that come with them. I just don't know that the upside with these guys, not only because of their arm talent, which not only means arm strength, but also means the ability to consistently put the ball on the money and maximize the yardage that you're gaining on every play, the ability to handle pressure, that's huge. I mean, we've basically all quarterback success and failure will come down to that. If you can't play against pressure, you will not be a starter in the NFL for long. And then overall, just their ability to transcend the scheme and be able to create plays downfield in those situations where they've got to do that. And, you know, getting off of their first couple of reads and then actually extending plays. So, you know, they have the tools to do it physically. I think as far as scrambling, and moving their feet well. It's just they're, I just think that they have so much else to work on as far as the basics to overcome their limitations that it's just unlikely. And some of this is just going to be playing the odds, where the odds say it's extremely unlikely for someone with Deshaun Watson and Mitchell Trubisky's arm strength to become more than maybe like an average-ish quarterback without all of the right pieces around them.
Ian, one other thing that you included in your draft guide that I really enjoyed were, I guess you could call them superlatives. I think you called them skill rankings, but you included like best pocket passer, highest upside, some of those types of categories for each position. And one that caught my attention was the safest backup, Nathan Peterman from Pitt. He's a guy that's not really on the radar for fantasy football. I don't think he's I'm not sure there's a team he could land with that would make him fantasy relevant, at least this first year. But do you think he has any long-term starter upside, or do you see him as a backup only?
Yeah, I just look at him as a backup. I know that there's been a lot of attention his way this draft season, and I can sort of understand why. You know, if he's going to be a guy that coaches can rely on as far as operating a very basic offense, and we see this every couple of years. Aaron Murray was another guy that got a lot of attention like this. AJ McCarron from Cincinnati, he's another guy that the media just loves. The media loves to pick up on these weak-armed quarterbacks that really just excel in like these West Coast schemes. But ultimately, they're very limited. I mean, you're really talking, it's extremely difficult to win long-term with this type of player. And that being said, though, there's some value to having a backup who can come in on a pinch and be able to execute the basics, kind of keep the ball away from defenders. You know, they're not going to have as many necessarily issues controlling an offense because they're going to be running curls, slants, maybe dig routes on occasion, but you're going to try to limit some of those intermediate routes. But you're going to basically just hand them the keys to a very basic offense. And if you can trust them in that situation and have faith in them that they're going to be present in the building, they're going to be working with your starting quarterback on maybe even being like another coach or like another mentor to them if they're really good on the whiteboard. I think that there is some value to that. I don't value it terribly high, but the NFL does seem to value that a little bit more because we see a lot of these backup type of players last for, you know, like a decade in the NFL. Like Jim Sorgi is a really good example where he just physically had no chance in the NFL of being anything good. And I don't think Peterman's too much different than that. I think I comped him to Colt McCoy, and Colt McCoy is not someone that you want starting in the NFL long term.
One other quarterback I wanted to ask you about before we move on is Joshua Dobbs, former Tennessee quarterback, and his intelligence, I guess, is well documented. But for the longest time, the assumption was if he wants to make it in the NFL, he's going to have to switch positions. But then he goes to the combine, he works out as a quarterback, and now not only does it look like he's going to stick at quarterback, some have even mentioned him as a second or third round pick, which really surprised me. Do you see upside with him?
Yeah, I do. I do see a little of the value of that, and kind of in the same vein of Peterman. So I had these guys really closely graded, ultimately, so about a half point for me. So like for my grading scale, which I don't love, like the numerical grading scale, but in a grading scale for me, that's a difference of about a full round. Here it ended up being about the sixth round versus the fourth round for Peterman and then sixth round for Dobbs. Dobbs, you know, he's kind of similar to Peterman in that 0 to 10 yards. He's pretty reliable. He can get the ball there on time. He's got decent enough accuracy. He's very good with his legs, just like Peterman. These are guys that can scramble, they can run, they can gain yards that way. And that's a really nice benefit to have as a backup. But you look at the inability to throw downfield, really to just consistently. I mean, Tennessee's offense was so limited in that regard. They were basically only running downfield routes off of play action after they were running it with either Dobbs or Kamara or Hurd after running it, you know, 70% of the game. So they were just taking their chances very conservatively. And so he didn't have a ton of attempts down there, and for good reason. He has a long release. His throwing motion is filled with motion. And the more time that you're taking to release that ball, the more time there is to create some errors in that throwing motion. And you see a little bit of a hitch in his throwing motion on a lot of examples. And so for me, I do see the value as a quarterback, but it's just because this guy is literally brilliant. But I do think on the football field, he does make good decisions. He protects the ball extremely well. Did not throw many interceptable passes, as you can see in my accuracy charts. And I do think that there's value to that. It's just going to be as kind of like a second or third string type of guy.
Yeah, you keep hearing people ask, who's this year's Dak Prescott? Like, that happens every year. And the name I most often hear is Dobbs.
Yeah, and I guess that makes sense. I liked Prescott a little bit more than that. I had Prescott as a third-round pick last year. Obviously, I didn't think he'd be this good and this quickly. But you do see his strengths just accentuated sure. in the NFL. And I think you would with Dobbs, too. Like, if Dobbs had to play, look at Cody Kessler. Cody Kessler had a very similar rap sheet as far as strengths and weaknesses as Dobbs did. And I think that you could probably project him similarly. If you could say, well, if you quickened his release a little bit, maybe that improves his accuracy to the intermediate level just a tad. And maybe you can get away with him being a starter for two or three games. Obviously, it's not someone you're going to want long term. But yeah, if we knew who the next Dak was, then we'd be talking about the next top five pick at quarterback.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, like he comes, like a Dak Prescott comes out every year. I mean,
right.
Exactly.
Or that it's easy to predict who that would be.
Right. Like, oh, obviously it's him.
Yeah. And it's so situationally based too. I mean, and this is nothing against Dak, but it is fair to say the offensive line, you know, Dez Bryant, Ezekiel Elliott,
wow.
There's not many situations with that around him. And Jason Garrett, too. I mean, he's a good offensive mind, too.
Ian, let's look next at the running back position. I think everybody pretty much agrees on the top four running backs in some order. You have it Mixon, Cook, Fournette, and then McCaffrey fourth. For me, it's that running back five spot where it really gets interesting, and we see that second tier. It's funny, you have Marlon Mack as your running back five in your rankings. And last week we had Graham Barfield on, and he's a little more fantasy oriented, I guess, but he was not a Marlon Mack fan. So this will be a good opposition for his point. I'd love to hear what you saw with Marlon Mack that made you rank him as your fifth overall running back.
Yeah, no, and I totally understand. I understand people that aren't going to like Marlon Mack. He's a guy that he's going to take a lot of losses. He's going to take some missteps in the backfield. He's not going to always read the right hole, and he's going to try to dance in the backfield as he's trying to create those big plays. But for what I like, I am willing to live with some of that. I'm willing to live with a guy who gets maybe 0 or 1 or 2 yards on a handful of carries, and then he busts a 35 to 60 yarder. Because he just happens to hit the right hole, and then it's just acceleration downhill. So I'm willing to live with that a little bit more, especially in like an outside zone scheme. I understand people that maybe want a little bit more consistency from him. He is not extremely consistent. He is not going to be the type to get you 4 or 5 yards a carry and be able to break off more of like a chunk runner, almost more like a Lamar Miller type of runner. He's not really that type of guy, I don't think. But I find the value in him in those big plays. And where he ended up as fifth, I think kind of reflects the depth of the class. But then, like you mentioned, the uncertainty after those top four. You know, I have a guy kind of similar to him as far as a value, Joe Williams, as my 13th running back. And if you were to tell me that Joe Williams was a better player than Marlon Mack in 3 years from now, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, it's just one of those classes where, and I talked about the half point earlier, they're about a half point difference. So they're about a round and a half-ish different to me. So to me, the expectation is still very similar. But the fact that I have 10 running backs in between those guys kind of just talks about this class depth and how reliant they're going to be on the situation that they go to. So, I mean, from a fantasy perspective, it's going to be, to me, completely dependent on where these guys land and the opportunity that they're given, more so than the talent, because I think all of their talents are fairly similar.
Ian, was it you that compared Mack to Tevin Coleman?
Yeah. Yep.
We had mentioned that comparison on here a couple of times. I think that makes a lot of sense. But as far as that second tier of running backs, both in fantasy leagues and even in the NFL draft, I think, like, kind of like you said, from 5 to 12 or 15, they're just so closely ranked. All of those guys have their pros and cons. And, you know, you almost have to just pick your favorite and go for it. It's going to be tough to project who might go at the end of the second round or who could fall to the beginning of the fourth round when we're talking about the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, even just looking back at last year, this is kind of a good example. Kenneth Dixon falls to the fifth round. We didn't see a running back pick between the Dolphins taking Kenyon Drake in the third round, which was kind of shocking to me, down to Kenneth Dixon in like the fifth round. So like the smart teams are waiting. Smart teams are willing to say, hey, these are the names that we're interested in, but we're fine with these five guys as long as they're at our price. With this many backs, I mean, I went, I think I went 25 deep at running back, and I still felt like I could have cranked out like another at least five scouting reports on these backs. There's just so many backs that are going to be available, and that's going to push them all down, I think, to where you're talking guys like Aaron Jones, Elijah McGuire, maybe even like a Jeremy McNichols. Like these are really good backs that may very well be available into round four, round five of this year's draft.
You know, I think that's a really good point with this class. I hadn't really thought of it till now, but day two of this class or this draft, Friday, might be very few running backs selected. You know, I mean, maybe Cook falls the second round, or, you know, Mixon maybe, you know, who knows what's going to go on with him. But whoever that fifth guy is, it might be quite a while until we hear his name.
Yeah. I don't think teams are going to get too desperate for them, especially with it being such a deep defensive draft too. I'm going to see it right. Say that, you know, teams are probably going to look at like those premium positions more often than not, because we still have a number of good free agents, you know, outside of the draft. Like we have veterans still in free agency.
Adrian Peterson. There.
Exactly. Like these guys are available for 1 year deals. Jamal Charles, like, would you rather invest a second round pick into one of these guys or maybe give Jamal Charles a 1 year deal or Adrian Peterson a 1 year deal? And then, yeah, those guys might end up not giving you anything, but at least you didn't invest a second round pick into a back that may only get 60 carries on the year. Maybe you can then take a fifth or sixth round running back and get similar production for that value. Because unless if you're taking them to be a starter, if they don't get injured, if your starter doesn't get injured, I should say, there's an opportunity or there's a possibility that they don't get the opportunity to really impact your team as expected.
And like you said, it's a very deep defensive draft, but I also think many teams are going to be reaching and overdrafting offensive linemen too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it just follow the money. I always try to follow the money per positions more than I do necessarily perfect fit sometimes. I mean, in my mock draft, I had Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette into the second round. I don't think those are second round caliber players. To me, the way I value the positions, though, it's really difficult for me to justify taking a running back sometimes over a key positional player on the defense, especially when the defensive players are getting paid so much more than the running backs.
Ian, the other running back I wanted to ask you about is your running back nine in your draft guide, Brian Hill from Wyoming. He's kind of an under-the-radar player. We haven't really talked about him much on here. What did you see that you liked a lot about him?
Yeah, so he's my 69th overall prospect, which is really nice. But I was a kind of a fan of him as just like that consistent guy. And so we're going to talk like the opposite now of Marlon Mack, where Jordan Howard last year is just like a guy, you know, physically, I just looked at him and I was like, man, this just the way this guy moves just reminds me of Jordan Howard, who obviously is second leading rusher in the NFL last year, which is incredibly random. I like didn't realize that until I was writing an article last week. And I was like, that's crazy. This guy had 1,300 yards, but I don't think Hill will get that type of production or that type of opportunity. But I like the way that he plays as far as his ability to get through the hole, getting through the line of scrimmage, getting to that third, fourth, fifth yard consistently, being able to stay versatile, obviously with Wyoming. So if for people who haven't really watched them too much, and I was ended up actually watching them for Josh Allen, their quarterback, and I was like, oh man, Brian Hill is really good. And he was really the focal point of that offense with a quarterback that people talked about maybe going top five this year and next year. And Josh Allen. And so Hill, what they did there is they were able to, it was more of a run heavy scheme, but they were running out of shotgun. They were running out of I formation. They're running out of pistol. Those things to me do matter a little bit, especially when you talk about like Leonard Fournette. Fournette was not able to produce in shotgun. Well, Brian Hill can. So projecting him to, again, the 32 team scope, which I don't have the benefit of kind of narrowing that down a little bit. Looking at that from a 32-team scope, I think that's going to be a nice versatility bonus for him to get on the field early in his career. And I do think that his athleticism for his size relatively is pretty decent. So I think as a number two back in the league, who if your starter gets hurt for maybe two or three, four games, I wouldn't really feel that my running game is going to be non-existent with a guy like Hill.
Ian, let's transition now to the wide receiver position. A couple of players I wanted to ask you about there. The first one is your sixth-ranked wide receiver, Ryan Switzer from North Carolina. Kind of an undersized slot guy. I actually heard some negative reports about him coming out of the combine, so I'm interested to hear what you have to say about him.
Yeah, so there's always going to be these situations where I'm just going to fall back on what I saw at film. I didn't expect this guy to be the fastest. I expected him to be one of the quickest, and I believe he was. He's not going to be the strongest, obviously. He's 5'10", 185 pounds. He's not going to be some like physical freak, obviously, especially when we're adjusting for his density. I mean, he just has no chance on that route. But what you saw on film, and I think that with his three-cone time kind of confirmed this, is that this dude is just one of the shiftiest players that you're going to find. And his ability to win in space and create just in those one-on-one situations, whether it be even near the sideline, but especially over the middle of the field, he's going to be really hard to stop. You're going to have to shade a linebacker his way. You're going to have to bring a safety down potentially to stop him on third downs. And just making the defense think of that sort of weapon to me is very valuable. I realize that he's probably not going to go until day three of the draft. And so my value, along with the NFL's value of him, the NFL tends to really undervalue these slot guys. But if he can be a top 5 to 10 slot guy in the NFL without being like the Odell Beckham class, then I think he is worth that type of second round investment, because to me, that's a starter in the NFL. We know that teams are playing the nickel on defense 70% of the time. Well, that's only because they're reacting to the offense. So especially as teams are looking to kind of get like these linebackers that can move well enough to cover receivers. Well, if you have a guy like Ryan Switzer, there's no linebacker that's going to be able to cover him one-on-one. It doesn't matter. So if then you're going to maybe force them to put their nickel back on the field. Most nickel corners aren't very good. Just period. They're just not. There's not many impact nickel corners. You look league-wide, you can maybe name five of them. So I just think it gives the offense the advantage when they can win so quickly off the line of scrimmage and in spaces.
What's interesting to me, and you kind of said this, is, well, without saying it, but he's a little white dude, and everyone thinks, oh, that's Julian Edelman and Wes Welker and Cole Beasley. But they say it in a negative manner. Like, all those teams are really happy to have those players. You know, like Tom Brady likes Julian Edelman, and Dak Prescott likes having Cole Beasley around. They have immense value.
Yeah, like those guys are getting, you know, 70 to 100 plus targets a year. Like that's a really valuable role in the offense. Like it may not be ultimately, you know, hugely productive, and obviously they're not Antonio Brown, but you still have to have consistent role players on the offense. You know, the only concern for me with Switzer is just going to be his hand size and his drops. He does have some of those drops, and so you can see him kind of get buried a little bit early on. I think this happened to Daniel Braverman last year, a guy that I liked too. I was a little bit surprised he went in the seventh round of the Bears. I thought he'd catch on with the Bears, but he was a little bit of a smaller guy. And if you have a bad training camp as a late round pick, it makes it really difficult for you to stick on the roster. So I don't think Switzer's going to have that same problem. Like, I don't think that they're even in the same tier, but it was kind of a similar play style. Even though Braverman was a little bit more vertical as a player than Switzer. But you're right, though. I think there's an insane amount of value for the offenses that are willing to use him as that third or fourth receiver.
What about the player you have ranked right behind Switzer, your wide receiver 7, Ishmael Zamora? He was another one of those players that did not get the combine invite due to some off-field issues, but hasn't received quite the attention that Joe Mixon has. He's got a lot of upside, though, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. He's not the freak type of athlete that maybe like a Calvin Johnson. I mean, no one's that type of athlete, but like he's not that type of athlete where he's got the agility to go with the straight line downfield speed. He doesn't really have a lot of games that you can really point to either. He really had just a handful of big games at Baylor. Some of that was out of his control, I thought, when I went back and watched some of the other games where he didn't produce. Some of those were just bad throws. Some of that was just that program being just a disaster this past year comparatively to where they used to be. But this is a height, weight, speed guy. This is a guy that you're going to bank on to say, we want to bring him in. He moves extremely well. He breaks off a press despite being a third-year player and really only a second-year actually contributor. So he's a very young guy. The way he wins at the catch point to me shows promise. Again, it's not consistent, so you're not getting 100% version of who he possibly could be. And maybe he won't become that player. But I like these types of players. To me, this is the quintessential second day pick. I'm willing to take the risk on someone who can run as fast as he can. The way he plays after the catch, he's extremely powerful, can break tackles with ease. He's just a nightmare for these corners. And we have so many small corners that are around like that 5'11", 6 foot mark, like 200 pounds. This guy has a lot of size on them, and his ability to get vertical quickly is just an invaluable trait. If you can teach him to effectively sell curls, slants, comebacks, and go routes, he's going to have a heck of a career. Like, he doesn't need more than that. He doesn't need to be a well-versed route runner. He doesn't have to be a guy who makes guys miss. He can win at the catch point. He can win with defenders on his back. So he just has to be able to sell just enough routes to kind of keep defenders honest.
A guy we talked about just last episode briefly, because we were doing more running back talk, was Curtis Samuel. Is he a running back? Is he a wide receiver? I know you're really high on him, and maybe he doesn't translate to the fantasy world, but what kind of player is he?
Yeah, so to me, he's an offensive weapon, and we've heard that term a lot, and we've heard guys like that not really pan out long-term. You know, Dre Archer was that type of player, but look at his size. He's got a little bit better size than a guy like Archer. I think he's a lot more explosive and a lot more fluid in his motions, whereas Archer, even though he was 5'6", he was a little bit stiff-hipped, and I thought that you could see that he couldn't really explode as much out of his movements. He was just kind of like a downhill player with that insane speed that he had. But Samuel, to me, is a guy that won everywhere that Ohio State put him, especially once they put him in a bigger role. And to me, that was the key, and that's kind of what sold me on him, is that he struggled a little bit more in the shadow of Ezekiel Elliott, and as soon as they got him out from his shadow, he became an extremely productive player, and really almost like a 95% version, or maybe like a 90% version of Christian McCaffrey. I don't think at running back he has nearly the vision that McCaffrey has, and I mean, maybe that's not even fair to say because he only has really a full season at the position. Cumulatively, like that's not even just 2016. That's maybe talking the last couple of years combined. So to me, I want to get him. I want to use him because he's a four down player, which I think should help his draft stock. He's going to contribute on special teams. I like him a lot in the slot. I think that's going to be where you're going to get the most out of him. As a runner, I'm fine with giving him a handful of carries a game, maybe like 5 to 10, because I think he's going to do enough damage and get chunk runs to make it worth it. But I don't think he's necessarily patient and consistent enough as a runner to be there full time. But if a team has that in mind and then that's their plan for him, as long as that's the plan to give him those reps and give him that kind of slack to make some mistakes sometimes, I think that that's fine.
You want him on your team, though.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really like the matchup guys. I really like one-on-one players who can make guys miss and really take it to the house with those opportunities.
All right, Ian, let's look next at the tight end spot. For most people, it seems like they have Howard and Njoku and Evan Engram as the top three. Those rankings get shaken up a little bit for you. You have Bucky Hodges as your third-ranked prospect. Tell us about him.
Yeah, so he and Evan Engram really aren't really tight ends. I mean, I'm sure you guys have talked about that. You know, it's just one of those things where he's 257 pounds and he was designated more as a tight end at Virginia Tech despite almost never blocking at Virginia Tech. And so I just kind of kept him there for consistency's sake because maybe someone will want to use that size in that type of function. I don't know that they will. To me, he's more like an X receiver, and I think he's actually one of the most talented receivers in this class. If I were to rank him at wide receiver, he may have graded out as a first-round pick for me. You just look at the 6'6", 250 size. Really, I'm focusing in on the 6'6 there. The 257, he doesn't really play to that, and I want to see him be a little bit more physical, want to see him be a little bit stronger at the catch point. He had some drops issues, and I think that's going to be my biggest concern with him moving forward. But he's a guy that draws a ton of defensive penalties because he's getting past corners. Like, not only – we're not talking linebackers. They're lining him out wide. They're shading the safety to his direction. Jerod Evans was still throwing to him, and he was getting a ton of penalties called on the defense – enforcing jump ball situations, and you're always going to take him in those jump ball situations just because of the sheer size and the athleticism. So he's kind of like Zamora in that I like taking these types of risks. I'm willing to take that type of risk. I'm willing to lose on that type of freaky talent. And I'm really excited to see kind of where he lands, because I think in the right situation with a quarterback that kind of trusts him in those situations, he could really become possibly like maybe one of the best receivers in this class.
This guy is another one who really seems to be rising up the boards. I've seen many people project him as a second round draft pick, Adam Shaheen from Ashland. And before you really talk about what you liked about him, my question with guys like that, obviously a small school, I'm not even sure. I think Ashland is Division II. I'm not even positive about that. But how do you scout guys like that? Obviously, they're not on TV. There's very little film of him. I know Draft Breakdown has a couple of his games. But overall, when it's small school players like that, how do you scout those guys and get a feel for their game?
Yeah, it's really difficult. And I think that especially on like Draft Twitter, you see guys like this get pumped up every year. And some of these guys don't even get a chance in the NFL. Like, they just don't even get drafted, and they don't really get picked up as free agents. They kind of just wash away, and yet like it's the same mistakes every year that we're seeing. And so when a guy like this comes around, I try to keep that in mind. That's something that I've tried to keep in mind to better my own process. You know, Ashland, I graduated from Ashland University, so I know people there. I worked with the football program there. So because of that, I was kind of in the loop on him, and I was able to get coaches tape on him. So like, that really helped me. As good as Draft Breakdown is, sometimes just having that sort of access is just like that much better to be able to make, you know, this type of decision to give him such a high grade. But for me, it was when I look at these type of players, they've got to dominate. That's the number one thing. They have to just stand out. You could not even just be watching him. Just watch the game. And if you consistently go back and look at that player and say, he's faster, he's bigger, he's stronger, and he's constantly making plays. And that's what this guy does. Adam Shaheen is, obviously he's huge. He's not like fast. He's 4'8", type 40 at the combine. And I thought that was pretty realistic. He's also a 280-pound dude. So, like, I don't need him to be a 4'4 dude. I think he's a freaky athlete just with that 4'8 speed at that type of size. I mean, he's a defensive tackle, or he's an offensive tackle or offensive guard project for most teams in most years if he's like a 5-plus second runner in the 40. So, you know, I'm willing to bet on him because he plays so athletic. He makes great plays with the ball in the air. And I think that stuff really helps his projection to the next level. You're not going to maybe use him as a starter. I think he has some low end starter traits and talent. But you do have to kind of just trust what you're seeing and maybe put some faith into this guy that he is what he kind of looks like he is. Because obviously the jump, even just to the FBS, would be a major jump, or Division One, I should say, because Ashland's Division Two. So, but yeah, it's one of those things where you try to not get carried away, because there is going to be an adjustment period, and we don't see a bunch of these smaller school guys succeed. But you know, when you get the conviction, sometimes you just got to roll with it.
Yeah, before I was hired at Pitt, I donated time with Duquesne, which is a tiny little school here. And the year I was there, we had Lee Bodden. I don't know if you guys remember him, but he was a corner in the league for a long time. And you're right. I mean, you know, people didn't even throw at him. Like, he didn't even have to show up. He didn't even get his uniform dirty, because no matter who he was covering, that guy had zero chance of making a play. And that's the kind of dominance you have at that type of level to be considered.
Yeah, like, I think people forget, or at least don't constantly think about. It's really easy. It's not just football. It's in basketball too. Like, just like the sheer talent that these guys have just to get to the NFL or just to be a standout in college, like not even to be a star. It's just huge. Like, the talent level is so much different. Kind of reminds me like Pierre Desir a couple years ago too at Lindenwood. Like, nobody was even throwing at that guy. And I mean, this has been for other reasons too. He's kind of bounced around the league a little bit, in part due to injuries, but you know, it's like those, you know, these types of players, just them standing out is a real credit to them, and just to get to the NFL. And then it just makes it that much more impressive. The guys like Von Miller, Antonio Brown is who I was thinking of, but like guys like that, like how freaky they really are to be able to stand out on that level.
All right, Ian, let's wrap up here. And before we do that, I want to hear a couple of your favorite day two picks, players that are likely to go in that second or third round range. And again, we'll focus on those four fantasy relevant positions, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. Who are a couple standouts that you expect to go in the second or third round?
Yeah, so at running back, I think Jamal Williams is a guy that I really like out of BYU. He wasn't really the high upside type of player that I think that at first I really was hoping for him to see. And then when I kind of went back, saw him a second time, I was like, okay, you know, especially after the combine, I was like, all right, yeah, you know, I see that he's not really the most athletic, most fluid type of runner. But I do think he is does have good movement skills for his size, 6'2", 212. You know, he's extremely young. He's only 21 years old. So I think he's going to enter the league at a good time for his body to continue maturing. He's not going to be a type of guy that gets a ton of 60-yard touchdowns. He's not going to get a lot of breakaway plays. But I think that he can, if he goes to a situation where he's the number two back, maybe like Oakland, a situation like that, or even like Arizona, if he can go to a spot like that where he can, in the event of an injury, he could really get the opportunity and take over. And I use Matt Jones as the comparison. I think that's going to be a good situational type of comparison too, where he can come in and be like, maybe like a low end type of, play for folks on certain weeks. I don't really know that he's got the upside to be like a huge breakout star, but he's a guy that I like as a consistent player. At wide receiver, I'm sure he's going to be kind of a name that you guys have talked about for a while, but I really like Juju Schuster-Smith still. I've got him as a third round type of value, Jarvis Landry type comparison. I don't think he's going to produce like Jarvis Landry has, just because I don't think that there's many receivers that are going to go to that type of situation that Jarvis Landry went to. And I don't think he's got like the breakaway ability that Landry showed. But just as far as like the consistency, especially if you can get him inside the slot, if you're going to prioritize the ability to move the chains, kind of more of like a West Coast type system, using, you know, best fits, I listed like the Cowboys and like the Los Angeles Rams, like those type of teams that really need like that possession type receiver to go with their other core. I think he could be a really nice addition to any type of offense just because of his consistency. And I thought as a sophomore, he looked a little bit more explosive too. So maybe finding out like, why was he a little bit more explosive in that offense? Was it just the players around him? Was it the scheme? What exactly was going on there? But he's a guy I'm willing to bank on just because I think his low floor type is actually pretty high. Like, I don't see this guy really washing out of the league anytime soon. I think he's just going to be a really solid receiver. And kind of also in that second round range, or day two range, I should say, I've got him as my fifth receiver, Carlos Henderson. I'm sure he's been a hot name in the fantasy world as well. I really like this guy's ability to separate off the line of scrimmage. Doesn't have the extremely quick high-end speed. He's not the most athletically gifted player, but he's just a guy that I just think he tricks cornerbacks. He's got quick enough feet. I think he's a very good route runner, even though Louisiana Tech didn't ask him to be a tremendously diversified route runner. I just think physically what he's able to do is he's able to manipulate his balance and be able to sell routes as well as he can. He's extremely competitive at the catch point, and that's going to be something that it's going to be a little bit more difficult, I think, in the NFL to continue. But if he can prove to be a little bit more physical at the catch point, he could be a real stud.
All good stuff there, and we love Juju on the show. What about the same question for the third round? Dig a little bit deeper. Any players from those positions that you expect to fall to the fourth round or beyond?
Yeah, I'll start with tight end at that one, since I didn't get to the tight end on the second one. The tight end position is just so loaded this year. A guy that you don't really hear much about, Jeremy Sprinkle out of Arkansas. I think he's just going to be such a good traditional tight end. 6'5", 252 pounds, just a really well-built player. He's not one of those guys that's just going to blow you away with athleticism, but I think he's just so well-rounded that's going to fit really well. Just right into the NFL. You look at situations like the New York Giants, if the Giants don't get a guy in the first round, maybe that they just say, okay, we're going to come back to that position on day three. Or the Detroit Lions, they may not want to invest highly again after having two first round tight ends kind of flame out for them in recent years.
Denver, perhaps.
Yeah, Denver would be a really good one as well, especially with Jeff Heuerman coming off of the torn ACL. So, you know, Sprinkle to me is a guy that would really stand out in that range. If we're looking at receiver, these, to me, this group is so crowded. I like our Darius Stewart out of Alabama. I don't know if he ends up making it to day three, but I just think he has a very unique skill set because the way he plays after the catch, to me, he's the best receiver after the catch in this draft. Like, he's more of like a running back once he has the ball in his hands. And that's just so unique. And I don't really know that you really have more than maybe like two or three guys like that in a particular draft class, or even maybe over a multi-year period. So he's a little bit of an older guy, which I think could actually help him. That could actually be a benefit to him early on. Maybe long-term, that's a little bit more of a concern. But he's well-stocked, thick dude, 5'11", 204 pounds. So I like that. I would also throw in there at receiver, I think Josh Malone is going to be a good value. I like his ability to get downfield. I mentioned earlier, Tennessee didn't really go vertical too often, and that really hurt Josh Malone. It limited his exposures, and he had some issues with drops, so that can quickly sour people on him, and I understand that. You know, but to me, he's a guy I'm willing to kind of take as maybe that that variance type of player, get him downfield, making those plays with that 6'3 frame. I would really like that opportunity to work with him. And then a running back, Aaron Jones, he's going to be a pretty popular name, I think, throughout the draft process. 5'9", 208 pounds. He just blew everyone away at the combine. I was actually kind of shocked how athletic he was at the combine. Was one of the best pure athletes there. But you look at what he did on the field, too. He was just extremely consistent. This is going to be your kind of 5-yard of carry back. And then he showed the athleticism to be much more than that, potentially. Maybe like a CJ Pro size, Charles Sims type of player where he can impact the game both on the ground and as a receiver. And then I like Joseph Yearby too from Miami. I have him as more like a fifth round type of player. He's definitely going to be more role reliant than I think maybe some of the other backs that I have ranked. But he's a guy, he runs extremely hard and he's a good receiver. And I think that those two things will get him somewhere in the NFL. He just needs a little bit of the opportunity. It may take some time. It may take a year or two, just like it did for Damian Williams to kind of find his role in Adam Gase's offense. But Yearby's a guy I'm surprised to not see him go to the combine just because he's got the natural talent to be in the NFL.
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. When he declared, well, first of all, I was surprised that he declared early from Miami. But then to not see him not get invited to the combine was kind of a surprise as well. So hopefully he makes it and can find his way onto a team or into a camp at least.
Before we go, one non-fantasy question. Who's the second best defensive player in this draft?
I think it's Malik Hooker, safety out of Ohio State. I like guys who take the ball away. That to me is guys who take the ball away with timing and being able to read plays quickly. To me, is just extremely valuable, especially at safety. You don't see guys who can play single high like that too often. And he's a scheme changer in the back end.
All right, Ian, thank you so much for joining us today. Really great stuff draft fans, NFL fans, and especially fantasy players will be able to use. Before we wrap it up, just tell our listeners where they can find your work.
So at NFL Film Study on Twitter, and then my draft guide's available. There's a 10-page sampler available for free download at draftcentric.weebly.com, and then there's also the purchase link. If you purchase, it'll be emailed directly to you. It's only $7 too, so I appreciate all the support for that, and really appreciate this opportunity, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And I know Matt and I both highly recommend your draft guide. Just really enjoyed that and learned a lot from that as well. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time with more Dynasty Blueprint.